Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, folks, to Hamp's Corner of America, a corner where your host, Codis Hampton II, hangs out with notable guests discussing topics of interest to you and yours. Milwaukee's 13th and Juno is where our host grew up, where his creativity and his imagination originated. Hamp's Corner of America is where we discuss, debate, and innovate. In the end, we will all leave with a sense of purpose. So come on, hang out with us. And now your host, Codis Hampton II.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Hamp. Here at the corner, we're pleased that you're taking the time to check us out. We are old school here, without disregarding the contributions of hip-hop to our current state of being. You will find that we often refer back to our past, as we do believe that if you do not know where you came from, you most certainly will not get to where you want to go. It is our hope that you will hang with us and our guest of the hour, and even contribute to the discussion, so that we may leave here having gained, or at the very least, enhanced our perspective on the topics of today. And by all means, have fun while doing so. Without further ado, let's get deep into it.
Hello, 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 folks. Welcome to the show. I'm glad you're taking the time to join us. A few things here. This program is brought to you by Hamp's Corner of America parent company, the Chia Group. You can check us out at www.chiia.com, where you will also find how to order my latest book entitled Gracie Hall Hampton, The Arkansas Years, 1917 to 1953. You can also find my blogs on a regular basis at www.katara-rhythm.com. That's katarrhythm.com. At this point, I want to bring on our special guest, Ms. Kelly M. Shea. Hey, Kelly, to begin, let me welcome you to our show. How are you doing this evening?
Oh, thank you. I'm doing really good. I really appreciate you having me on your show. I'm so very excited to be here.
Oh, good, good, good. And we're excited to have you because, I mean, you know, the things that you've been posting on the Facebook and the work that you've done over the years has been just outstanding as far as we're concerned. So I'm happy to share that with the audience. And without further ado, let me just go ahead with it. It is great to talk to you again, as I said, and I'm excited about the topic of the day, searching to find your roots. So without wasting any time, again, let's jump right into it. I understand you were adopted as a six-week-old baby by your adopted parents who lived in Minnesota. How did and what age did you learn about your real mother and father?
Oh, that's a very good question. You're 100% correct. I was adopted at 6 weeks old, and I was actually adopted into a Caucasian family, so there wasn't a whole lot of guesswork in terms of I kind of knew I was adopted. I'm black and they're white, but that being said, my parents always pretty much told me, you know, I was adopted and gave me a little bit of background information about it, so I pretty much knew from day one.
Okay, all right. Were you a curious child while growing up as to why you were put up for adoption in the first place?
Absolutely. I most certainly was. You know, my parents, I was born at a time where it wasn't very politically correct, I guess, for a lot of interracial relations in the area that I was born. So my mom and my dad have, they basically always told me that, you know, if you ever decide to find your biological parents, you know, there may be some issues. It could go one way or the other, depending on the circumstances in which you were conceived. So, you know, being told that at an early age, I mean, yeah, I had a lot of questions. I mean, it was never thought anything other than one day I absolutely would find those answers. So I was very inquisitive.
Oh, okay. Well, can you give us a little background into what led you to search for your father's relatives out of state?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess in a nutshell, I moved to Atlanta, and I had always kind of figured, you know, I want to find my parents. I was adopted through an adoption agency, so I knew that I had to go through the adoption agency to find, you know, my parents. You know, and that's a very touchy subject because, again, being told from, you know, very early on that it could go either way, you really have to be prepared because if it goes left and you want it to go right, you have to be mentally stable enough to handle that. If someone tells you, no, we don't want to meet you, and those are your roots, how do you process that information? So I was in a discrimination situation, and it was a lawsuit, and I won. It was a discrimination claim against a company that I worked for. And it wasn't really overt racism, but it was the type of racism that I kind of dealt with my whole life growing up in the areas and around the people that I was around. So when I won, I had an overwhelming urge. It was kind of that just tipped me over the edge, and I just thought to myself, I have to know why. I want to know what happened between my parents and why I was given up for adoption. So that is really what prompted me to start the search. And when I did the search, the adoption agency contacted me. They found my biological mom, which was great. But then 2 days later, they contacted me and said, you know, that they'd found my father and he had passed away. He had passed away when I was 1 year old.
Yeah.
So that really, I mean, it never dawned on me that he may not have been around, that he may have passed away. So it really was emotional for me. So with that being said, immediately my attention was at that point on, I'm going to find his family. I'm going to find him. You know, we're going to do this. So I went to meet my biological mother, and I told her straight up, I want to go down and get his death certificate and basically learn as much as I can. And based on the conversations that I had with her, she didn't remember a lot, or she wasn't really willing to give me a lot of information, which is what just took it to the next level. It just took me to the next level. But the fortunate thing about that was when I went to go get the death certificate, on the death certificate for my dad, there was he was interred at a mortuary. And at this mortuary where he was interred in Minnesota, I used to live there. My boyfriend's uncle owned that funeral home. So I called him immediately, and I said, hey, you're not going to believe this. I'm like, my dad, your uncle prepared my dad's body. And I was like, do you keep the records? He said, yeah. I said, well, I'm going back to Atlanta. Can you send them? He said, yes. I got back to Atlanta, and he faxed me over the information of Hampton, who was my dad's brother. Mm-hmm. And it had the fact that I had a sister, and it said that he was divorced and where they lived in Milwaukee. I immediately got on the internet and started looking.
Wow. I tell you, that's a great story. Well, and what were some of the early obstacles that you encountered while you were actually trying to find the family in Milwaukee?
Well, as I said, I got the death certificate, so I went online. I was like, I don't know how many Oprah shows I've seen. I can do this. So I basically got online, and I found everybody in Milwaukee with the Hampton name, but I didn't know the names of, you know, his parents or any of that stuff. So I just started calling. I just started calling people and asking, and it just so happened I got my half-sister. Her name is Bernice, and when I called, I said, you're not going to believe this. You probably see this on TV all the time, but this is for real. This is who I am. I think that you may be my family. And she said, I think I know who you are. She said, you know, can I call you back? I need to call a couple people, and I'll call you right back. And she said, I know who you are. She said, you have a great uncle who's still living, and you have an aunt, your dad's sister, and they really would like to talk to you. They've been waiting for this. And, I mean, I just about died.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can, you know, I don't think anybody can just about imagine what kind of emotions was going through your head at that time. It's just like, you know, you're listening and you're just sort of a robotic state going,
yep.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. So is that the way it was?
It is. It's almost, you know, I've been thinking about this lately, about really what that was. It was almost, I don't want to use the word traumatic in a bad sense, but it was absolutely a trauma, you know, to the point where you're just outside of your body. I don't think I was in control of my emotions at all.
Okay.
Yeah, it was very, very overwhelming in a good way, but in a way that if you've never experienced, you just don't know how to handle it, you know. So for me, I was just overjoyed beyond any kind of joy I could have ever felt, and I was also relieved, you know, beyond any kind of relief I've ever encountered. It was just, it's something that I can almost probably not even put into words unless you've actually gone through it.
Oh, boy. Oh, well. Well, I mean, I didn't want to start you off emotionally here right off the top. I'm going to take a musical break and sort of let you get collected here. And hold on just a minute, okay?
All right, very good.
All right, I've been asked about our show's musical theme. Well, today I'm going to play the entire cut, and we'll also feature it as a sign-off in our shows in the future. The cut is taken from former Crusaders guitar player Larry Carlton's CD of the same name. He was a young man when he played with the Crusaders. Anyhow, here's the cut and our theme song entitled Deep Into It. It is obviously one of my favorites. Check it out. what I'm talking about. Further evidence that Larry Carter can pick it. All right, Kelly, I was going over some of our earlier correspondence as far back as February of 2011. You were so excited at finding out who your families were and looking forward to meeting some of the family members in Milwaukee. Although some of the excitement was muted at finding your father, as you just mentioned, Jovan Hampton, had passed away. And you mentioned that the first person you contacted was Bernice, and Bernice is just thinking about Bernice. I can almost see her expression on her face when she got the call. Yeah. So, what was it like to contact relatives on your father's side? I mean, what was that like? I mean, do you have any words for it?
Yeah, it was surreal. I mean, it really was. You know, for years, you in your mind, you think about what that's going to look like, how that's going to feel, and you think maybe you're a little bit prepared. Yeah, there is no preparing. It was, you know, just probably one of the most impactful moments in my life, just to hear their voices and to have the conversation. I spoke with Aunt Kathy first, and, you know, she had a series of questions for me. They weren't really sure exactly who I was due to the circumstances of Joe dying early and so forth, but so she asked me some very poignant questions, and then she went into some history about, you know, my dad and about the family, about herself and about her kids, and just really in general. And, I mean, I got to be honest with you. She may not have known, but I was in tears, happy tears.
Yeah, that's the – you got hold of the right person. That's the detective of the family on that end, Cat. Well, I call it Cat, as my father did, but you're right, her name is Kathleen Hampton Lee. I believe it, at least from the correspondence, you met our Uncle Calvin Hampton, the sort of the sage of this whole informational, I don't know what we could call him, a place where you go to get history of the Hamptons.
Yeah.
So what was that? I mean, now you're in Milwaukee and you actually see the man and you see your half-sister Bernice, and you've met Kathy. So, Kathleen, how was that?
Well, I actually met Uncle Calvin first. When I spoke on the phone, I spoke to Uncle Calvin, and the moment that I spoke to him on the phone, I guess the best way to explain it would be it was almost like a fire had ignited. I felt like I had known him forever. And, I mean, we talked for hours about just really pretty much everything. So when I went to Milwaukee for the first time, I brought my mom, my adoptive mother, with me. And we went to his house first. And funny story, and really not even a funny story. I mean, it brings tears to my eyes when I think about it. We went there, we were going to pick him up, and we were going to Aunt Kathy's because she had gathered a bunch of relatives, and they were having a party for me. So I went up to the door, and Uncle Calvin opened the door, and he basically said, you finally made it home, baby. You made it home. And he hugged me, and I just lost it. It was beautiful.
I can see his face. Oh, yeah. I can see his face. He's a, you know.
Yeah. So it was great. It was wonderful.
Yeah. How long did you stay there for that visit in Milwaukee?
I was there for a couple of days. We spent Kathy insisted we absolutely enjoyed ourselves. She was the best host ever. I was like, I must get it from her, even though I never knew her. Wonderful host. We stayed at her house for a couple of days. I went back and forth to Uncle Calvin's house. We did stuff with him, and we did stuff with Aunt Kathy. We got to go to the cemetery to see my dad's grave with my sister. It was just unbelievable. I mean, it couldn't have been a better visit. She totally decorated the house. There were balloons with welcome Kelly, welcome home Kelly, and all these relatives that it was unbelievable. I mean, I'm looking at people that look like me, and I'm, you know, just absorbing the energy, and my Aunt Kathy was so comfortable. You know, I felt like I belonged. you know?
Yeah. Let me step back a minute. When you looked in that phone book and you saw the Hamptons that live in Milwaukee, were you surprised at how many Hamptons you saw?
You know what? I didn't even look in the phone book at all. I went online, and there was an overwhelming amount of Hamptons that were out there. I think that's probably what started kind of my skills in terms of the ancestry, which was because I didn't have much to go on. And my biological mom was telling me about this Roy. You know, he had a brother named Roy. I remember Roy and Maria. And I'm like, I don't know who any of these people are. So I'm thinking, okay, he's probably about this age. He would be this age now. If it's Milwaukee, you know, and on the death record, it says he was married and divorced. And then there was a daughter. So I literally was like, let me do the math and work out the demographics and try to figure it out that way. And I found Roy's obituary, which was helpful, and I found Jovan's, there was the Social Security Death Index. So it didn't have any identifying information, but it did have, you know, his information based on what the adoption agency had told me. So, you know, that just left me climbing the walls that I couldn't find more information. I had hit a roadblock. So until I went to Milwaukee and I was talking to Uncle Calvin and Aunt Kathy, and that's when they told me just how expansive the Hampton family is and basically all the states that we reside in. I was just like, wow.
Yeah. That just blew me away. I mean, you know, I know when I made up my mind to leave Milwaukee and come move to California, my grandmother Gracie, she says, well, why are you leaving it? Well, you know, the whole nine yards is you should stay here and all this stuff. But, you know, she said, oh, well, you've got people out there, too. So, you know, family always find where family is, so to speak. So
that's true.
Yeah. After that visit, I imagine you and your mother your adopted mother had a lot to talk about on your way back home, huh?
No, not one word between us. Not
no
one.
No kidding?
Not one. Yeah. It was kind of strange because, like I said, my parents, you know, my family is, they're white. They haven't really been around a lot of African Americans. So I would equate this to the same thing as me growing up in their world. She was in a situation that she wasn't familiar with. It was everybody in there was black except for her. Not that that's a bad thing, but she just has never been in that situation. Now, she held very well. I mean, she wasn't, like, you know, all freaked out or anything. She did fine. But I could tell that, you know, it was new to her. So I don't know really what her emotions were, but because of what I had just experienced, I was fine with not really having, and she may have been going through her own stuff. There really wasn't much to say because I was just processing, you know, everything that had happened. And, you know, it didn't dawn on me until we actually got back to her house because I flew into Minnesota and then drove to Wisconsin to their house. So when we got back to her house, that's when it dawned on me. We didn't even talk the whole ride home. And maybe she was just respecting the fact that I was probably processing a whole lot of information.
Could have been, yeah. That might have been part of it, too, you know. At that time, it's more or less like, well, let me, as you just said, let me let her process this information. You know, it's a lot for both of us here, you know. Well,
and that's actually why I brought her. It was because I wanted her to be comfortable. You know what I mean? As being the adoptive mother and meeting, especially, you know, these are my black relatives. I am black. As an adoptive parent who is not black, what I didn't want to happen is for her to feel like they had something to offer that she didn't. I wanted her to feel comfortable that that's my mom, no matter what. That is my mother, period. I have a biological mother and father that, you know, I gave birth to me. And then I have my parents, the people that raised me, took care of me, loved me, helped me when I was sick, you know, made me who I am.
Yeah, you can't say enough about that because they've been there when you had the sniffles and you scraped your knee and all that good stuff. So
exactly.
Well, I know you continued your research, and your research has found single, double, and sometimes triple connections between the Belans, Hamptons, Davis, and Green families centered around Bradley County in Banks, Arkansas. Would you give us a couple of examples of what you found?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they're like my grandmother. Her name is Odie Beelan or Odie Hampton. She married a Hampton, as did her sister. I mean, there's so many examples, I don't even know where to begin. Literally, you know, I talked a lot to my Uncle Calvin about this because he basically gave me perspective on a lot of this. So when I brought it to his attention, he would say, you know, Kelly, back then there really wasn't a whole lot to pick from, and basically our ideology was this. As long as you were, you know, first cousins or further, it was all good. Anything prior to a first cousin was off limits. So that being said, because it was a smaller area and there was large families, of course, there's going to be people that marry into families that you may be related, you know, not directly or immediately, right. But, you know, a couple lines down, you might be related in that way. Right. So that being said, couple, triple, double. I just spoke to a gentleman last night. He's related to me and you, I suppose, I guess, Trotters, Beelands, Strongs. And another side, you know, it's just, it's, I think most times, more than not, especially today, it's probably still occurring because people don't know. They no longer know the history to understand that, oh, wow, we are related four generations back.
You know, hey, it is what it is. Like you say, it's a small community and everybody is, you know, your heart can't help who you love. That's for sure.
There it is.
All right, I'm going to take another musical break, and this is sort of a tune that's keeping in the same feel or the mindset as our topic of the day, and this is called Brother's Keeper. It's actually from India Ari. So enjoy a minute, and Kelly, you can take another break. And,
okay.
We'll come back right after this.
Very good.
Open my heart, can't
we're back. Kelly, I know you had mentioned that you had, I guess your research turned up that the Trotters were related to your adopted family in some way. Would you care to comment on that again?
Yeah. So when I started the research, I hadn't done my DNA or anything like that at that time. So I was going mm-hmm. simply off of information and data. And the data that I was researching for, actually the Trotters, Uncle Calvin would feed me names, and I would just kind of look and see what's out there. I really didn't know what I was looking for, but anyway, I came across the Trotter family. And in coming across the Trotter family, there's another family member. Her name is Jessica Trotter, and she had done a lot of research. And I was looking at what she had out there, and she had put together a profile. And as it turns out, the Trotter family, and we're talking about the Caucasian side, mm-hmm. they had married into the Shea family, and Shea is my last name. Mm-hmm. That's my dad's, my dad's surname. That's his family. Mm-hmm. So the person that was intermarried into the Trotter family, it happened in Arkansas, and they migrated to Wisconsin. So, of course, I was like, whoa, 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 you know, what's the deal? So I was looking at this particular individual. His name is Cornelius, and he is related. I don't know exactly what the degree of depth is, but I do know that he is related through that line. So they came from French Canada, the Shea family. They came from Canada. They were called French Canadians. So my dad's dad used to say, oh, we're not, no, you know, they would say, you're Native American. Oh, no, we're not in Native American. So as I started looking at the region and reading the data that she had and then doing my own research, I came to the conclusion that they came through Canada and somehow they made their way through Arkansas. They met the Trotters and they ended up in Wisconsin. And they are a distant relative of my dad, the Trotter family.
Mm. Mm. Oh, that's just, I mean, you know,
deep.
It's amazing. Once you open that history book or whatever and then you start going through and coming up with that research, you're just amazed at the nuggets that you find, huh?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, my I think we talked a little bit about this too, not to precede anything, but with my mom's side, the same thing happened. It was so crazy. When I met my biological mom and she sent me a picture, she looked almost exactly like my mom. Same haircut, same hairstyle, same hair color, same features, same, you know, they dressed the same. I was just like, this is so weird. And I showed my mom, and she didn't say anything. And then when they met, I think they both were like, oh, my God, they both wear glasses, same kind of glasses. They dressed. It was just crazy. So in doing my research, as it turns out, my mom is related to my biological mom from, like, the 1850s. It was a stanky woman that married her grandma, my adoptive mother's grandmother's side. In Wisconsin, in all the same areas my mom's relatives live, so I about freaked out. So, yeah, that was very strange.
Yeah, all you need now is a little Twilight Zone music, you know?
I went to a seminar and asked them, has there been anybody else who's had this situation? Have you ever heard of this happening? They were like, no, I've never heard of a situation that's like that. So it is. It's, me and my Uncle Calvin were just like, oh, my God. And he goes, whatever you're doing, just keep doing it. Who knows what's at the end of that rainbow, you know?
Well, I understand that from talking to you that this newer technology such as DNA matches are helping in the search. Can you tell us how the DNA results works with a person's search for ancestors?
Oh, absolutely. I think it helps in many ways, but the ancestry search, I joined 23andMe, not to plug anybody in particular, but it is what it is, and then also Ancestry. So I've done DNA tests for both of them, and what that does is it will automatically find searches based on your DNA makeup.
Okay.
So there are people that will come out of the woodworks, last names you've never even heard of, and it will show you on a chart, hey, you're 30% related to this person through this ethnicity or whatever. Or they can go through your family line and say, you have this family tree, this person has this family tree, you guys have this person in common. But in most cases, it's not about the family tree, it's about the DNA. So, yeah, it helps a lot because you meet people you didn't know. I figured out for myself, you know, you think ancestry is a chart, a tree, and you say, well, this name matches to this name, so we must be related. And the DNA takes it to a whole other level because you may have thought you were a Shea, but maybe your dad was an Anderson and you just didn't know it. So all kinds of things come out in the wash with that. That's extremely interesting.
Yeah, I know from talking to my mother, you know, she told me, I don't know, maybe a couple of years before she passed who her father was, and said her mother didn't tell her until she was almost on her deathbed, you know, so.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, and it is amazing. You might have touched on this a little bit, but I want to ask the question anyway. On February 27, 2011, you wrote me the following words in an email, and I quote, "Uncovering what I have so far, I am not sure what to make of it. What does this mean? Is this a miracle? Am I a miracle? Am I some kind of messenger, or am I the message?" End of quote. Now, over 3.5 years later, Kelly, have you come to grips with those particular questions?
Have I come to grips with it?
Yeah.
I have.
Or how do you see it now, so to speak?
I have. Well, you know, to back up a little bit, when I met my Aunt Kathy and I went to meet my family in Milwaukee for the first time, and I just got to share this with you briefly. You know, as they were telling me about my family, we were looking through some books, and I was looking at this book, and this guy was in this picture, and I'm saying, oh, my God, I know this guy. I've seen this guy. Like, I've seen him. I know him. I've seen him. He's like, I don't know if I dreamt about him. I think I may have dreamt about him. And I asked my Aunt Kathy, hey, who's this guy? And she said, that's your grandfather. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, I swear to God, when I moved to Georgia and I got my house, I was here 2 weeks. I woke up one night, and there was a guy in the doorway, black guy, tall, real tall. And I'm like, that's the guy that was, and I didn't know if I was dreaming or not. So my Aunt Kat, I'm all like, oh, my God. And she turns to me and she goes, Kelly, it's really common in our family. Things like that happen to us all the time. Yeah. So I was like, oh, okay, wow. So to go back to your question, with the ancestry, you know, the way that Uncle Calvin did it, I had no clue really what I was looking at. He was trying to teach me in a backwards way so that, I would know my roots. It's one thing to say, hey, this is your cousin, but it's another thing to say, let's start all the way back at the beginning as far as I can go, and you can either take that further or you could trickle it down to the people that you will eventually meet who are your immediate, you know, family. So with that being said, a lot of what I found at the time, which I really wasn't, I didn't know if it was right or not. I would look at stuff and I'd say, well, yeah, I think it is. I got a gut instinct. And I would say, what's this? And he'd go, how did you find that? And I'd say, I don't know. And he'd say, that's 100% correct. What's the date of birth? What's whatever? That's them. So in essence, the question and the comment that I posed to you came at a time where my thoughts were, there's no way. I don't have any formal training whatsoever as far as genealogy. I didn't even know I was interested in genealogy. What are the odds that I would be as successful as I am if it wasn't meant to be? So in my opinion, I was saying, well, this can't be a coincidence. Therefore, is there a purpose behind the information I'm finding? Because ultimately, I almost feel like it's finding me.
Yeah. It's just like information is just jumping off the page. And, oh, here I am.
Wake up, Kelly. Yeah.
Yeah. I know I used to talk to my mother and father about that, and my grandmother, too, about that feeling that you have, or that, you know, that you've done things before, you see things that maybe aren't there. I know for a long time I used to have these instances where I'd walk in, walk in a bar or walk in a house or something, and all of a sudden feel that I've done this before and I've seen this before. And it freaked me out there for a minute until you talk to the family and, you know, they say, oh, yeah, we have a lot of that in this family. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Can I tell you a secret?
Go ahead.
Not that we don't have 100,000 people listening, but so before Uncle Calvin died, I talked to him probably 3-5 times a week, literally. I just talked to him all the time. And he had been telling me for weeks. He kept telling me about this dream he had, and it was about his wife, Marjorie. Mm-hmm. And he would say, I saw Marjorie last night, and he's like, but she wouldn't turn around. I would say for about a month. He just kept telling me about this dream. Like a week before he died, he called. We were talking. He said, I had that dream last night. He goes, but you never believe what happened. I was like, what? He said, she turned around. I saw her face. And I knew immediately when he told me that, when I got the phone with him, I cried. I was like, he's about to die.
Yeah.
He died a week later.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, he died a week later. I called a couple of my friends, and I think I told my mom. I was like, he told me this, and I thought, I think this is a sign. I think he's not going to be with us very long. And she was like, well, don't worry about it. And that's exactly what happened. So, anyway, I say all that to say there was that dream, and then he had one other dream where he was in the kitchen, and he said my grandfather, his brother, was in there, and he told him to make a sandwich, which he did. And he said he just looked at him, expecting him to say something. He didn't say anything. He woke up, and I thought, that was the weirdest dream ever. Why would, and I was like, oh, that's so strange. And I still to this day don't know what that was about. But he too had that. He told me several stories where I was like, what?
Yeah. It's that, I don't know. It's I know every time I, of course, when I grew up there, I used to play with his son, Johnny Lee. And I mean, we used to play little men together and all that stuff. But when I moved away, every time I'd go back there, and as a matter of fact, when I was working on the book about my grandmother, I'd, asked him a lot of questions, taking notes. And, of course, I'm not a, I don't do shorthand, and I have to write this out and, oops, misspell, cross it out. So I'd have to ask him to, now what did you say again, Uncle? So it used to trip him out. But I know, from talking to him, when I first saw that picture of you leaning over his shoulder, I called him, and I said, Uncle Calvin, who is this girl? But, because I knew what you had sent me, but I'm, oh, June, that's what he called me, June, she, and he just went into, the whole, you could tell the excitement in his voice. He just lit up talking about you and how you came about and how you met, and a 15-minute conversation about, oh, she is just wonderful. She's doing things that's, I know he had great love for you, and Calvin, we all hated to see him go, that's for sure. So, but there was a lot of them in our family that we hated to see go, but Uncle Calvin was a wealth of information, that was for sure.
He was definitely like the grandfather I never got the chance to meet, because of course my grandfather died too. So yeah, he was literally like the grandfather I never had. That's exactly how I looked at it.
Yeah. Oh, well. Let me ask you another question. You visited Bradley County, Arkansas here a couple of years ago and met some of our relatives down there, saw various areas you read about doing your search. What was that experience like for you to be in Bradley County where the center of the what is it, ground zero, as for lack of words.
Yeah, that's a good way to explain it. That's absolutely, well, I could, oh my gosh, I took that trip by myself, and I went to go. I had already started talking about ancestry with my cousin, your cousin Mick Arthur Davis, and Princella Davis, as well as Michelle Green. So I went to meet them, and I took the trip by myself. I drove from Atlanta to Arkansas, and that was like probably the best road trip I ever had. Even though I didn't have a companion, it was just extremely, I don't even know how to explain it. It was I don't know how many hours, but it was the best. It was just awesome. So as I drove into the city, it was exactly like you said. A lot of the research that I had read, all of a sudden I'm seeing it as I come over the horizon. And when I got there, again, what really blew my mind was, in being adopted and whatever, and there was some issues with race in terms of my mother, my biological mom being white, her family was extremely racist, and my dad, you know, obviously was like, he wasn't, so he's black. So anyway, when I got there, it was almost like I had been gone for a while, and now I was back, and things had changed a little. So some of the things were a little bit different than what I read, but for the most part, I felt like I knew this place. And then, you know, the people there, seeing people that look like you everywhere, mm-hmm. you know, and I was with MacArthur in Prince Ella. So Mac would say, hey, you know, that's your cousin. You related to them. You related to them. And I mean, I was just blown away. But what even blew me away more was, you know, I started talking to people, and they were like, wait a minute, you're Jovan's daughter? And I, you know, yeah. And Mac said, see, I told you. And they said, well, what happened to you? And I was like, wait, what? And they're like, yeah, you know, your dad was on his way back to Minneapolis. He wanted to get custody of you, and he died. So we didn't know what happened to you. That, I think, took me to a whole nother level because I was unaware of that information. But there was a couple of particular areas that were really kind of eerie for me where they took me back. They were like, you've been in the woods? I'm like, yeah. They were like, girl, you ain't been in the woods. And then they took me in the woods. I was like, you're right, I ain't never been in the woods. I ain't know, what is this? Like, we were way in the woods, right?
Yeah.
So they were showing me all the homesteads and all this stuff that I read, you know, the maps and all. I was like, wow. So we went back to this place, and I think the Strongs lived back there. It was by these railroad tracks, clay, streams, rocks. Oh, my God. Right. I got there, and it was like the hairs on the back of my neck and everywhere just stood up. Yeah. So I went and I grabbed some rocks, some agates, and I brought them home with me. And during our trip when we were there, Princella and myself, we went to the church that's across the street from the school that they built during the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And we went into that church. So we went in there, and it was like everybody had just kind of left. There was still Bibles sitting out and everything. Mm-hmm. We went into the cemeteries, and in the cemeteries, I think that was so surreal. It's like all these people lived before me. I never got a chance to meet them. And yet, had it not been for them, I wouldn't even be standing here looking at this.
Yeah.
You know, just a real sense of connection, a positive connection, just a very strong connection. I think that it changed my life. I think just being there changed my life. I mean, so much so I came back and started talking to my mom about, you know, buying land there. Like, I didn't want anybody's land as it related to family to go away. I know that there was a lot of land that was owned after the Civil War just based on my research. So those places that I saw, which, you know, there's no longer houses there, but some of those clearings are open. And you just, immediately I was, like, attached, addicted to it. I really, it's just a beautiful place.
Yeah.
I felt at home.
Yeah, those people were very self-sufficient down there. I mean, they lived off the land. They hunted in the woods, you know, fished in the lakes. And, you know, they didn't. There was no Safeway or Lucky's or whatever supermarket that, you know, a person might think of in those days. They just went out to the backyard or to the smokehouse and whatever and collected their dinner for the evening and went to the garden and got their vegetables and...
Mm-hmm.
What amazes me is a lot of these people lived, take Uncle Calvin, a lot of these people lived a very long time, you know, just on the meals that they, you know, they grew up with. You know, sometimes you hear people, you know, when they're talking about different staples in your diet, you know, don't eat this, don't eat that. And I remember people, I remember my father said, yeah, we eat the hog from the rooter to the tooter, you know, so, just basic country folk, but they were real folk, and that connection that you're talking about is so needed among not only us, but I mean our young folk. They need to understand where they came from, you know.
Right. Yeah, I have this conversation. I've had it several times. You know, people. You know, I've been engaged a couple times in my life, and, you know, people's idea of success is certain things and a certain stature and just things, right? And I always used to say, and I always have said for years, it wouldn't matter to me if I lived in a shack. As a matter of fact, living off the land and having to provide food for my family and actually do the work, not that you would go, I choose that or I want that, but I was like, it would be more meaningful for me, and I probably would have a more fulfilling life without all this stuff and the ideology of success. To me, success was exactly what you just mentioned. These people, like, raised food, farm animals, provided nutrition to their families, made homes out of nothing, survived, had traditions, had cultures, had camaraderie the way that I don't know that we will ever have again. To me, that's what I would say is success.
Yeah. Tell you the story. I went back down to stay with my grandmother while my father and mother was going through their divorce, and I must have been about 6 or 7 years old. But I, you know, I have very strong memories of things that happened. But I remember we used to go to church and, you know, ride in a wagon and whatever, and then we come home and my grandmother's house was right on the wood line, so to speak. So, you know, if they'd gone about whatever they were doing for the rest of that Sunday, and I'd be out there on the front porch preaching to the trees. I'd sing a little bit, and, oh, you know, jump up and down like the preacher. And, I just had this good memory of that kind of things. And, you know, I look at, you know, obviously, you know, I raised 3 kids here, me and my wife, and even they, you know, times change, but you look at, the fact that we've become such an individualistic society now, where kids are so wrapped up into what's on their tablet that they're not, you know. My wife and I, you know, we're retired, but we make sure we eat together every evening. You know what I'm saying? You need that.
There you go. Yep. There you go. Exactly.
Yeah.
People are disengaged, and I think that they have a false sense of security in terms of, you know, what makes who you are and what that consists of. You know, it's attached to things that, you know, have no meaning. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that we have in common as a people is that one day we will all die. So if that is the outcome, and you think about what you're doing now, and you know that that's your outcome, that's what we all have in common, and you really think about your purpose in life and what are you doing and really kind of who are you and what are you here for and what are you doing with your life, it's kind of, it's interesting. People get very, it's like they're, I don't want to say confused, but they're chasing after things that are shiny. Shiny. There's some substance you need to be kind of getting at this point, right? Getting back to substance of self.
Right. Some people, and then, you know, some people are not as lucky as you or I to come from such a loving family, and people who, and I mean, I'm talking about both sides of your family, the black and white, that, you know, saw this as a family and treated it as a family and loved you as a child, and then I think of, you know, there are some kids out there that's just raising themselves, you know, and that's why we have so much problems. But I guess that's a whole new different story. And I'm used to me getting into that. Otherwise, we'd be talking about that all evening. But let me ask you my favorite question to you, because I think once I talked to you the first time, that was the first question I asked of you. Have you thought any more about putting your personal life story in a manuscript and submitting it to for publication?
Yeah, I've been approached. I've been approached a couple of times, and I have been writing. And, I'll be honest with you. You know, I think I had a very good outcome in terms of I'm in a good place right now. Mm-hmm. But when you start, like, even with my finding my parents and my biological parents and my ancestry, you know, nobody's really asked me about what that feels like or really kind of saw what that meant. But I used to talk to my Uncle Kelvin about this, and he would say to me, write it, you know, the way that it needs to come out. You know, some people are going to be upset. There are going to be upsetting things in there that other people won't accept, but it's your truth, and you can't let other people dictate your truth. So with regards to what you're saying, I've been approached by it, and I have been doing it, but I am having a hard time really kind of recognizing that, you know, I've come a long, long way. You know, just a long, I've gone through a lot. And that being said, you know, I haven't really had to sit down and think about that stuff. You know, I've made some mistakes, and I've done some very great things. But it is a lot. And most people don't really get the luxury to pontificate choices that they've made in this way that could be put into, you know, a manuscript for people to judge.
Yeah.
You know, as far as the ancestry, I already get that. Like when I bring certain things up, certain people get upset, as I'm sure you as a published author have probably gone through as well yourself, where people don't necessarily agree with your interpretation and or delivery. Yeah, of
and
your truth.
And that's a story for another time, too. But, yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah. So, I do plan on doing it. I think that I'm going to, you know, I admire what you do because it takes a lot to sit down and write, you know, and write in a way where it reflects you and to tell your truth, to look at it, stand in it, and accept it, and say, here you go, sell it, let's go.
You know, I came at it at a later stage in my life, so to speak. You know, I went through the whole, you know, 18 to 20 and didn't think I was going to make 21 and all that old doggone stuff. And now I'm just, I won't even tell you how old I am today, but I'm a senior citizen, so to speak. So, and I've been married, you know, almost 46 years, I think. I hope my wife don't come back and tell me that, wait a minute, it's really 45. But, you know. It's somewhere around there, but we've been together a long time. And, you know, when you're with somebody like that, you go through a lot of stuff, too. We raised the kids, and we've had issues there, but yet and still they're all alive, thank God. And, you know, to get to my point is that when I sit down now and I write, you know, and hopefully, you know, this will help you, too. I just write, you know. And just as Uncle Calvin said, however it comes out, that's the way it is, you know.
Yeah.
And whoever don't like it, well, they got the problem because I've got it out, and it's almost therapeutic for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to take a break here and play a song I actually selected for you, so... Listen to the words, Kelly, and then we'll be back right after this.
Thank you.
Okay? All right.
Baby, you know I'll never let you go. No.
right. I Still Believe. That was Larry Carlton from that Deep Into It CD. So you know that Uncle Calvin was believed in what you were doing, and Kathleen and everybody, and I mean the stuff that you're actually, information that you've researched or have researched, and you're now posting on Facebook, and you see that, you know, almost every time you post something now, you touch somebody that says, oh, yeah, I remember my so-and-so told me. So you're a godsend to all of us, Kelly. So we all believe in you.
I appreciate that. And I appreciate your dedication. What a beautiful song. And let me just say, it absolutely reminded me of when I met you. And when I met you, I got to tell you, true story, it affected me in a way you can't even believe. I looked at you and what you were doing, and I remember having this conversation with Uncle Calvin and my mom. And I was saying, God, you know, all of them, they're so established, and they're, you know, they're so smart, and they're, you know, they're so awesome. And my mom was like, well, obviously you know where you get your smarts from. And I was like, no, you got to check this CODIS out. And anyway, I say all that to say, you know, when I met you, you profoundly impacted me, because before then, before I met my black side, it was almost like being a balloon in the fog, in the wind. And when I met you guys, it was almost like I immediately came out of the clouds and the fog lifted, and I was in my skin. I was grounded. I understood. I could puff my chest out a little bit and look at my people, my kin, my cousins, my relatives, and go, yeah, that's me. So you were my first introduction to that whole chest puffing out situation. So I appreciate you for who you are. And I thank you for being so welcoming and you know, just being so loving.
Oh, no problem, no problem. But you're the talented one. So every time I open up Facebook now, I say, oh, well, I know I'm going to be here a while, because I know she's done posted some important stuff. So that's why I think that... you know, you got a wealth of information there, and you know, and some whoever tells your story, and well, I shouldn't say whoever; it should be you, because you're nobody's going to be able to tell that story like you.
So, no, I had people telling me, you don't need to find no more." They were like, "You're good. You don't need to find no more." I was like, "But I'm not done. It's just a feeling I have. I don't know what it is I'm going to find, but I figure when I find it, whatever that feeling is." From an intuition point of view, perhaps it will, you know, I'll be alerted. But until then, I still feel like there's something. I haven't found it yet, but it's out there.
Well, and I think you touched on a purpose, as you were alluding to at first, you know, that, you know, God put you here for something, and this might be you. You know, even though you've got a successful business, which we'll talk about in a minute, and you obviously you got to earn a living, but as far as... something that matters, leaving something behind for people to look at and feel connected. That's probably some of the most important work in this world. And I mean, some people can trivialize it all they want, but even in my opening of this show, I often say, heck, if you don't know where you came from, you don't even know where you're going. So,
absolutely. So, I agree.
You know, people have to have that connection. And that's why it's important for somebody like you to be there and say, hey, here's what, you know, and you've authenticated a lot of things where people, well, maybe that could have been, but down here comes Kelly who said, yeah, but this is it, you know, and here is the proof. And so to chronicleize that is just, I just think it's amazing. I wish I could do it, but, you know, it's almost like, you know, we all have our niches. That doesn't happen to be mine. Mine is trying to put this word down and trying to impact people in that particular way. But we all have a purpose, and this must be your purpose, lady.
That's so crazy. Like, I would have never thought, oh, genealogy, that's whack, you know. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, my God. You know, it wasn't like I go, yeah, I'm into genealogy. It just was, so, like you said, you got a knack, and all of a sudden it just comes out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know, and I know, as you said, you would start writing, but you'll find your way, and I don't think nobody's going to have to say, well, hey, maybe you ought to do this, that, and the other. It'll be you. You'll find your way and say, oh, okay, here's where I'm going with this, and I can still do more research or whatever, but you'll find your way. But I'm looking forward to it because I'm looking forward to the book, the TV series, and the movie.
Yeah.
So I could point to it and say, yeah, see, there's Kelly, there she is.
You know, and you know I'm all over that. I haven't done anything, but I completely agree with you. There's some things out there that I can't take credit for, but that have not been, brought to the surface that I think should be, and in and of itself, just out of respect for our ancestors and for the people that lived before us, that would absolutely, absolutely, no doubt in my mind, be, you know, from a business perspective, a huge circumstance. But that being said, you know, it's hard to really, it's so personal.
Yeah. Hard to
you know, just
the
like,
land. You know, yeah.
It's just very, very personal. But I will definitely get there, as you said, and I'm collaborating with Princella and MacArthur. I know they have another book that's coming out as well, so I've been working on some things for them. And eventually, like I said, I'm doing my own thing. I have my own thing. I don't really talk to people about it, nor has anyone really asked me, nor have they ever. So I've kind of always been by myself, and I'm introverted that way. But I think you'll be pleasantly surprised at the outcome.
I'll wait. No problem. Okay, I want to change directions and sorry about that. I want to change direction and talk about the business you started. You've been in the business of consulting, credentialing, and billing for quite a while now. I think, what is it? How long has that been?
Well, I've been in the industry for about 20 years. I've been in my prospective industry for about 15. I've been consulting for about 7 years. And I recently incorporated my consulting business, literally, like, recently. But I have been an independent, self-employed person for about the last 8 years.
So tell us about your company, Physicians Fees First, LLC.
Physicians Fees First, LLC is actually a consulting firm. And basically, I deal with a lot of different types of clients. But the majority of the clients I deal with a lot of contract negotiations for physicians and for healthcare providers, meaning that I deal with a lot of startup practices and facilities, hospitals, things of that nature. I deal a lot with negotiating physician fees as well as contract fees for facilities. My consulting firm has a billing company. We have a credentialing company, and we also have a healthcare analytics portion of that. So a lot of the clients that I deal with the insurance commissioner's office, the state of Georgia, and attorneys, a lot of attorneys in different states. So I deal with auditing, I deal with legal compliance, and basically making money for providers. I guess in a nutshell, that's what we do.
Okay. All right. Well, now, hey, we do live in America, and it is a capitalist society, so there's no shame in that game, you know.
Got to pay the bills.
All right. So do you take on your clients on a first-come, first-served basis, or draw up a service contract, or how do you go about it?
No, it's more like a boutique industry. A lot of my clients come from referrals. There's several attorneys that I deal with that work for the insurance commissioner's office. So as providers get busted or as they get into legal issues, a lot of times they will call me to come in and take a look, audit their situation, and see if I can't provide any value on them being able to turn around that situation. And a lot of times with startups, you know, originally when I was consulting, I was a director, a reimbursement director for Pinnacle Orthopedics for several years, which is an orthopedic chain, huge. And it was one of the founders of this company that came to me and said, you know, you're good, like you're really good. And he was like, have you ever considered consulting, working for yourself? And I was like, well, yeah, you know, I don't know, you know. And he was like, well, you know what, you would do very well by helping out these smaller practices and businesses out here because you could help them make a lot of money and expand their businesses. And he said, if I gave you some clients, would you do it? I said, yeah. And that's literally how I got my start, to the point where I didn't have to incorporate a business because it was all by word of mouth. I never marketed or any of that. From that point on, people just sent me clients. It wasn't until it got to the point where I was like, oh, my God, this could be a huge business, when I started dealing with these huge entities and companies in other states, and people were saying, hey, do you have these other companies to merge with, where I was like, I mean, I think I'm good at business. This is good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, okay, let's make it legit.
Exactly. See, that's why people know talent when they see it. That's for sure. So.
Yeah.
Now,
so
I have to ask.
Have you.
Oh, well, great. I have to ask, and, you know, even though the midterms is coming up and we hope everybody vote, but what is your original thoughts about Obamacare, or do you have any?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts. It depends on what you're looking at. If you're asking me what are my thoughts as far as, is it helpful for people? Is it helpful for business? You know, those are two totally different things. You know, the Obamacare as an ideology is a good fix, a good at best. That being said, you know, while it is marketed in the way that it is as a fix, there's a lot of business opportunities that are going to come from it. I would equate it to being the government tells you, hey, you should have 5 food groups, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they say vegetables is one of the things you need to have. Wonderful. So I need vegetables. I'm going to go to the grocery store. Now, I could choose any one of these vegetables I know I need in my diet. This one's probably pretty cost effective. I'll go with this one.
Mm-hmm.
And you take it and you say, this is good for me. But after you've consumed it, you find out, well, there's all these chemicals that are in it. And there's all these other companies that are profiting off of the cultivation of vegetables, which you said are supposed to be good for me.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of equate it in the same way. There's been a lot of business opportunities out of the Obamacare. I have set up several entities based off of the Obamacare preventative cycle that's come through, where they say they have to cover everything at 100% under preventative by law. They passed the law and said you got to pay it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's affected a lot of other people. So, yeah, I think as a marketing tool or a marketing strategy as it relates to the people, yeah, it's probably going to affect a lot of people. On the flip side of it, the same way as the vegetable, there's a lot of things that are going on just underneath the surface, but there's a lot of people who are profiting.
Yeah, I can believe that. You know, that's the way things go. As again, I'll refer back, this is a capitalistic society, so everybody
that it is.
Take, so to speak. Well, on the political side, what's your opinion of some of the state governors' refusal to allow their constituency access to this Obamacare via state programs? I mean, one of the instances, I guess, would be like the state of Texas, where Rick Perry said, well, we're not going to deal with Obamacare. We're just, and I think
right.
Louisiana, they're doing the same thing, you know. What do you think?
Right.
I mean, you know, what do you think about that?
I mean, I'll just keep it real. I mean, it's just a form of discrimination, period, point blank. At the end of the day, what you're doing is you are, you know, especially in the state of Georgia, you know, there's a lot of people that could have benefited from them being able to extend that, and they chose to shut the door. They choose to shut the door because if you allow it to open, the other people are not going to profit that were able to profit before, period, point blank.
Right.
And they have the ability to do that. But what they don't, you know, it's kind of like with Obamacare. Had they opened it up, that would have basically been, it would have filtered out in ways where people that were less fortunate or, you know, didn't have the means that some of these higher-end people have would have been able to benefit from. And, you know, ultimately as people are living longer, you know, you pick and choose your battles, but they present it in a way where everybody needs health care. But are you really dealing with the issues that are going to, you know, matter? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Preventative care is like obesity. So we'll just take that for example.
Mm-hmm.
With Medicaid, if they were to expand those panels, there are certain things on those expansions that would have been preventative, meaning the state's not going to pay hundreds of millions of dollars 5 years from now because you allowed yourself, you know, I won't say that because sometimes it's genetic, but you are in a situation where it's going to cost even more, from a healthcare standpoint. What they are saying is, look, we're not even going to entertain that. You're on your own, period, point blank. You know, and a lot of that has to do with the ability to negotiate. What they're trying to do is avoid, it's a free market in the business place. It's a free market in the healthcare industry. And that's what people don't realize. You think it's a doctor, you're supposed to treat me, you went to school from a healthcare perspective. And guess what? A lot of those doctors, especially these old timers, they think that way too. And somewhere in between the time that they started and where we are today, it has become a business. No more, no less.
Yeah.
And that's what you're looking at. That's a business move based on strategy in order for them to keep into place what they have. Right now, if they took everything and said everybody's on the same level, all the doctors are going to get paid the same fees,
mm-hmm.
everybody's going to have the same plans,
mm-hmm.
guess what would happen? You wouldn't have these huge networks, these conglomerates like, I don't know what's in your state, but like, you know, WellCare, WellStar,
mm-hmm.
Kaiser, they buy up all these places, and they're conglomerates, right? So they basically dictate who's getting paid what. If you say everybody's got to make the same thing,
mm-hmm.
there's no competition. Everybody's at the same level. They don't want that. No, somebody's got to be rich, and somebody's got to be poor.
Exactly. You know, you know, get rid of them, and we see some strange people at the world, you know, in the unemployment line, you know. So, yeah, they don't want that,
yeah,
that's for sure. So they're going to, it's almost like the pharmaceutical industry, you know, the money they contribute to those who are running for office, you know, that would be their bidding, you know. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
You hit it right out of the park. That's exactly.
Yep. Yeah. Finally, how may we get in touch with you as a business person, or if our audience has personal questions to ask about searching for their roots? Do you use your business email, or do you have one that you want to give us now?
I'm not going to give my – I'll give my personal email. I think it's a personal situation for everybody, and I'm open to anything and everything. They can reach me at shadyrest@gmail.com. That's S as in Sam, H as in Homer, E as in Edward, A as in Apple, D as in Dog, R as in Ricky, E as in Edward, S as in Sam, T as in Tom, @gmail.com. And again, that's shadyrest@gmail.com, or they can call me at 770-896-0846. Either way,
very
I'm open
good.
And ready to take questions or anything.
Okay, very good. Yeah, you're very, very open person and very nice. So let me say, in
thank
thinking
you.
About what you have accomplished for a lot of current kin folks to date, you are an amazing and special person, Miss Lady. There
I appreciate
are people
that.
Out
thank
there
you.
That have thank no, no, thank you. There are people out there that have no clue as to who they are and know full well who their parents and other relatives are. Most
yeah.
understand the feeling of belonging to a family tree of people with diverse and varied backgrounds. And as we have touched on today, your story is unique in so many ways. More importantly, in my mind, it could be a source of inspiration. And isn't that what life is all about, the ability to inspire others?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I
appreciate
others.
That.
Oh, no. I try reaching others through my writings along with playing musical selections on this show, as I alluded to before. So before you go, I'd like to know, what advice would you give any little girl or boy, regardless of race, on discovering who they are and the emotions involved in doing so?
I think my advice
would be...
I know
that's not an easy question, but I thought I'd ask it anyway.
I think my advice would be to try it. If they're interested in it and they're thinking about it, you really can't fail. And the reason why I say that is because, again, I don't have any kind of formal education, and I've been able to find a lot of things. And I think the reason why I've been able to find a lot of things is that I really am invested in finding a lot of things. And as you find those things, you know, it envelops you. The way that I see myself every time I find something else about an ancestor, it changes who I am, my makeup. You know, the more I learn, the more empowered, I guess is the best word, the more empowered I feel. So, you know, if you're interested, there is no right or wrong way. There is only the way that you do it. The way that you do your ancestry, CODIS, is different the way that I do mine. It's different the way that our cousins do theirs. And that's the beauty of it. It doesn't really matter. There's no right or wrong. You just go out there and you do your due. And once you find something, that's the addiction. You find something, you go, wow, that person, I helped. That, when I say the kin whose skin I'm in, you better believe I mean it. And I respect it. And every time I find something, that will be the phrase that I will use.
Okay. No, I think that's a beautiful way to put it, because as you say, that's, you know, and to be able to share it as much as you do, that and as others do, that's what helps. You know, it keeps the information flowing, so to speak, for people who might not even think about doing it. All of a sudden, they might start going to their old photo books and calling their folks and, hey, do you remember Aunt Song? So you just never know what you start, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Uncle Calvin once told me, just real quick, he said to me, you know, every time you find an ancestor, he's like, you have an angel. And I was like, what do you mean? And he said, there's no way any of us could have ever gotten to where we're at without guardian angels. He said, you know, do you really think that it's because of your expertise that, you know, information is coming to you? He said, clearly, you have angels, guardian angels. That information was there for you to find for whatever, however it may apply to you. And he was 100% correct. I can't tell you how. I can tell you I did this, this, and this. But several people did this, this, and this. And it didn't amount to what I found. They may have found other things, and it may have been appropriate for their journey. And so that's why I say, don't worry about doing it right or wrong. Don't worry about any of that stuff. If you get an instinct, you get that feeling, go for it. Because once you find that gem, that treasure, I'm telling you, it will change your perspective.
Exactly. Very well said. I'm going to ask you a little more personal question, not like I haven't been asking personal questions all along. Let me try one more. Do you think the issues and incidents you went through growing up while attending school contributed to who you are today?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do. I don't think I need that. At, you know, when you're in survival mode, I think you're surviving. And then once you get to a place where you get a chance to reflect, even then you're like, you know, this is, it's not fair, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But then as you start to, you know, get some successes, and I'm talking about personal successes, not what other people define as successes, your own personal successes, that's when you start to realize that, look, so I was so pissed because this whole, you know, this wasn't right and they did me wrong and I shouldn't have had to go through that or they didn't do this for me. At the end of the day, all of that stuff happened in order for you to get to exactly where you're at. Exactly where you're at.
No, that's hitting it on the nose. You know, I know from talking to people in the family, you know, well, you know, my mother did, my father did, yeah, I'm sick of that. Yeah, nah, nah, nah. Whoa, wait a minute. You know, first of all, we're all human, and I mean, you know, your mother, your father, they're not saints, and so you never know what was going through their mind, why they did this, that, and the other. You know, the deal is that you know who they are. You know, don't let that stop your progress from getting wherever you're trying to go. That's exactly what you just said, you know.
Yeah, amen. And some people never figure that out, but the sooner you figure that out, the better off you're going to be. That's when the clouds kind of clear up and you're like, oh, this isn't about them. This is about me and my ability to deal with the fact that I've been giving tasks and situations and obstacles, and they were necessary in order for me to get there. Without those obstacles, yeah, I wouldn't be where I'm at. So obviously, you know, I have a journey, and in that journey, it may not look like over there or hers or his. And if I try to do and live my life like over there or his or hers, you will never meet your objective. You're defeating the purpose.
Exactly, exactly. And the main thing is you don't want to wake up one morning and all you got to do is go to Walmart and, you know, ring up everybody's sales and have a coffee break and a lunch, and then when it's time for you to come home, you come home and turn on the TV and eat a cold or even a hot TV dinner and fall off asleep. I mean, at the end,
yeah,
you look back, and next day you start over, and, you know, somewhere in there you look up and you say, whoa, what am I doing with my life, you know?
Exactly. If we're all going to die and we don't know when, you'd be a little pissed,
yeah,
off if you died tomorrow,
yeah,
and you're like, I wouldn't have been eating them TV,
yeah,
dinners and do. I wouldn't,
yeah,
have been doing. Had somebody told me I was going to die, I'd,
yeah,
have done it differently. Well, this is,
yeah,
your wake-up call. We're all going to die. We don't know what day that's going to be. And so you can either choose to get some substance in your life and maybe do some things a little bit differently. Who cares? All you have is time to try things that are going to work for you, not work for you, whatever. But who wants to die and go, man, I really shoulda, woulda, coulda?
Exactly, exactly. Well, the last question is it's not really a question. Any other issues you want to get out of to our audience, or advice you want to give them, or anything else you want to say just off the top of your head?
Not at all. Just that I'm available if anybody has questions and if anybody needs help or if anybody just, you know, wants to talk about it. You know, I've amassed a lot of information. I'm still trying to kind of cipher through it. I don't have all the answers by any means. I have the passion, but I'm still trying to put it together just like everyone else. So I'm willing to help in any way that I can.
Okay, and then you gave them your email address, and, of course, you're on Facebook. So if they want to just type in your name, Kelly Shay, they'll find you. You want to give them the email address one more time?
Sure, that's shadyrest@gmail.com. That's S as in Sam, H as in Homer, E as in Edward, A as in Apple, D as in Dog, R as in Ricky, E as in Edwards, S as in Sam, T as in Tom, @gmail.com. shadyrest@gmail.com.
All right, then. I want to thank you, Kelly. It's been a blast and very informative. I am sure that we will stay in close contact.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Codis.
No problem. Hopefully I can have you back next year around this time for an update of where you are. So
I would love it.
And I'm going to keep shooting stuff your way and keep prompting you, and I'm sure you're going to keep fulfilling us with all this good information you're finding out.
Absolutely, you know it.
Yeah, I tell you, because you are good. I love you, girl.
I love you, too, and thanks again. I really appreciate being on your show.
All right, and we'll have you back. You take it easy, cousin.
All right, you too, cuz. Talk to you later.
All right, see you later.
See you. All right, bye-bye.
Bye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm just kind of spent because I have enjoyed this conversation with Kelly for, you know, it's just a blessing to have her here on the show. I don't know what else to say. It's just a blessing to have her here on the show. So we shall play one more. This is from the Dreamweaver CD by George Duke, and it's called Change the World. So here you go.
My main theme is the danger of nuclear weapons.
We are at a very critical point in American history.
As the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation.
Idealism is very important.
We can change the world.
We can change the world.
With all the problems we face in the world today, I know it's difficult to believe that a single person or a group of people can possibly make a difference. But every solution begins with a dream. And a dream is the substance of things hoped for, and hope put into action can be the beginning of something profound. My wish is that this song will uplift spirits and musically offer the positive messages that the world so desperately needs.
Gather around and talk a minute. What I have to say is quite simple, but very hard to do. What have we got to lose?
There are problems everywhere. See, my people just don't care enough to make a change.
That cut is sort of self-explanatory, entitled Change the World. Voices performing vocals you heard was Layla Hathaway, Jeffrey Osborne, Lori Perry, Dyra Sugat, Freddie Jackson, Terry Dexter, Kennedy Fusiler, and it's a fitting end to our topic of the day. We're going to sign off now, so... you guys have a good one, and talk to you later. Goodbye. Hey, Kelly. Hey, Kelly. Can you hear me? Kelly?